welcome to Returnity. I'm Letty Gordon-Furs, founder of The Springback Guide. Every week, we'll be diving into the pressing need for better support on women's back-to-work journeys after maternity leave. You'll hear real-life stories from working mums where motherhood has transformed their careers, and get an inside look at the industry leaders at the forefront of innovating in this space. Ready? Let's go. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome Gabby Griffith. Gabby, how are you doing?
Letty, I'm really good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you on. So first, I will describe how we know each other, or as ever, how we don't really know each other. But basically, we know each other through our mutual friend who introduced us as being part of this amazing panel for Bloomfest 2024, which is about the Lift, and it's UK's biggest network of females in communication. And then I looked up Big Fat Negative, which is what our mutual contact told me about. And I thought, oh my goodness, this girl's got a real story. And I thought, well, better to tell it than on Returnity, because it's obvious that fertility and having babies has totally transformed your career. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm. I would, yes, it's very true.
It's crazy.
It's a different turn.
So tell me, where are you in the world right now and what can you see in front of you?
I am in not so sunny Ramsgate on the East Kent coast. I'm at my dining room table looking at my living room because I've just been kicked out of my office.
That's what I just had.
I'm pregnant and we're basically playing house Tetris, trying to move things around and work out who's going to go where. And yeah, I think I'm losing my office in the process, basically. So
that's really sad.
It is. But this is a nice place to sit, actually. It's nice to change up as well. I've been in that back room for 3 years. So this is a different view. It's going to inspire me.
So tell me about your family. Who is in it?
So I have my husband, Dava, and my son, Otis.
Dava, this is an unusual name.
Yes, this is his cross to bear. He has to explain it every time he says it to someone. I think it's Sanskrit. He's not. Oh. His parents are quite hippie-ish. Yeah.
Got you. Okay. So it could have been Dava, could have been like Rain.
Or exactly. I think, Rain. Yes, very much. Huh? And we have Otis, who is 4.
Oh, I love the name Otis. Such a great name.
Yeah, he's pretty great.
Okay, let's get on to it. What did you do with your life pre-babies?
Good question. Oh, it's so much time on my hands. Do you remember reading newspapers?
But my husband and I were talking about it this morning. We were like, remember when we had time to do things? I was like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Did not know how lucky I was. Anyway, I was a business journalist. So I worked for a newspaper called City AM for a while. And then I moved over to News UK, to the Times and Sunday Times, and did more commercial stuff over there for them. So if you see an article that's sponsored by Lloyds or sponsored by KPMG, that was probably me. That was loads of fun. I really enjoyed it. And then I took an even bigger step into the commercial world and joined a PR agency where I was their head of content. And that was great. It was really, I love agency world is fast paced. I think that's what they say to cover up for how stressful it is. It's really fast paced environment.
Client focused, also another good way to cover it up.
AKA panic attacks in the toilet.
Yeah. or in the corridor, wherever. Yeah.
So yeah, I was there for a few years and then that's where I got married and started trying for a baby. And that was when everything changed, basically.
Yes. And we were talking a bit about this in the prep call for the panel, which is just like the whole journey of female well-being and kind of workplaces starting to really think about this and think about the impact that it has on our careers and also our propensity to quit if it's really going badly wrong. And I can't think of a better or worse example than something like fertility, where I cannot even imagine my friends who've gone through it, the commitment, the time spent, and also just the hormones and the impact that has on you must be bonkers. So when did you first have an inkling that all wasn't quite right?
I think we'd been trying for probably 6 months and nothing was happening. So my husband had mumps in his early 20s, which we knew. And I think at the back of our head somewhere, we thought, I wonder if that's going to be a problem. But we're just trying to forget about it and move on. And after about 6 months, we were like, maybe this is an issue. But kept going, kept trying. One of my best friends was actually going through IVF at the time. And I was talking to her quite a lot about it. And she was like, mate, you need to go and see someone. Because we hadn't been trying for a year yet. But she was like, I think we should I think you should go and check it out.
Yeah, get ahead of it.
And that's actually before we had any investigations, conversations with this friend of mine, Emma, that's her name, we decided to start a podcast about what we were experiencing. And that was, I didn't even know I was going to have IVF, but it was just the whole discovery process. Mm. And so we documented that from the very start, which I think was quite interesting for people.
Very.
Do you know what? The minute I started talking about it, even if it was just to a mic, things felt so much better. Mm. But it was difficult at work because when you're trying for a baby, every month it's just up and down. And you'd be sitting there just, is that a twinge? Do I feel a bit sick? Oh, my boob's a bit sore. My period hasn't come yet. And I'm trying to like engage in a meeting, but also mostly thinking about my womb. There'd be occasions where I just start crying in a meeting just as far as everyone else is concerned, for no reason. And it'd just be like, yeah, I'm going through this thing. And it is hard because at what point do you turn around to your employer and say, I'm trying for a baby? It's something no one wants to tell their employer. So it was a tricky time.
Incredibly tricky time. And especially if you're in an agency environment and it is more cutthroat, I'd say, than internal jobs where you're just doing things inwardly. There is so much pressure and deadlines have an extra meaning and people are paying for your time and there's just more pressure.
Yeah.
So I think, on top of the fact that there is a societal unfortunate trend of people losing their jobs after they come back after mat leave or even when they're pregnant for that matter, it's not surprising that you felt incredibly stressed about telling people. So how long ago was this? Because obviously you have a four-year-old now, but I appreciate it might have taken some time to get there.
So gosh, this was 2018. Quite a while ago. So I had loads of time, I started the side hustle podcast as well. So I was doing that and the J job and trying not to cry in meetings. And it went on for quite a while, maybe 6 months or so. And the podcast was doing really well, actually. And it was giving us, it was like medicine. And that's when I found out I would need IVF. And I just thought, you know what? I can't do this job and go through IVF. It's going to be too stressful. Everyone talks about how bad stress is for fertility. I hate that because I think it puts extra pressure on people not to be stressed. It's victim blaming. But I thought, you know what, I'm gonna quit. So I quit my job just before I started the IVF process. I kept freelancing for my agency while I was going through it. It's just having that kind of not being full time took that kind of pressure off, even though I was still working for them essentially. And we were very lucky. And I got pregnant first time we tried the IVF.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. Yeah. It's honestly, it does not happen that often. And so we were very lucky. But then I found myself in this situation where I was like, okay, so I'm pregnant now and I've literally just quit my job. And maybe I should have had a bit more foresight about that.
Yes. But at the same time, generally speaking, you tend to be paid a little bit more if you come back freelance. Is that the case or not really?
Yeah, do you know what? I did find that it was fine. I made enough money. They kept me in work until I was ready to start working and have my son. So I'd built up enough money in the business to pay for my maternity leave, which was good. That was a big fear I had. It worked out fine in the end.
Yeah. And starting the podcast, I know this from my own experience, but how is the podcast different now to where it was? Like when you think back to those early days,
gosh,
how does it make you feel?
We didn't really know what we were doing when we started.
Yeah.
But because we were both going through quite a visceral time, I think people loved it because it was in real time. They were following our stories and our journeys and what was happening to us. And so I think it definitely had quite an attraction to people. But then, of course, when we had both my co-host and I had babies that year. And so things changed a little bit. So we had to change what we couldn't talk about ourselves quite so much because our listeners were going through infertility themselves and they don't necessarily want to hear about what it's like to be a parent. So we had to switch off that button of just being absolutely honest about everything in our lives and just focusing on slightly more professionally the area of infertility and interviewing people. So it did change, but people still wanted to listen to us. So we kept going.
Yeah, absolutely. And your own fertility journey, was it unexplained for you guys?
No, because it was the mumps that did
it. So it was definitely the mumps you found out.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah. Whoa. They did tell us that it wasn't impossible for us to conceive naturally, but it was unlikely.
Yeah. So you are really putting yourself out there. And I wonder if I'm thinking about your kind of journalistic background, because a lot of the people who've done really well in the mum space do have a background in marketing or comms or indeed journalism. And do you think that kind of helped you feel more comfortable really putting it out there? Because this is so personal.
When you're a journalist and something dramatic happens to you, part of your brain does go, oh, this is awful, but it is a good story. So I definitely think having that kind of tendency was like, oh, wait a second, this is good stuff. But it turned, whenever I'd had a bad day or something had gone wrong in the IVF process, you do just turn around and think, what's going to be good on the podcast? So yeah, I think that did help, definitely.
And in terms of like people's reactions and stuff to it, how has it been? I know that social media can be a bit of a strange world sometimes. What has been, as big as you guys are now on social media, been like?
I think it's impossible to keep everyone happy all the time.
Yeah.
So I think we found out pretty quickly, because we were just no filter saying exactly what was on our minds. And I think that's what part of the charm was. But also you say some things sometimes be a bit insensitive by accident, and then people come at you and you're like, oh, but I didn't mean to. So there is a bit of that. I think it's inevitable when you're putting something out there and putting yourself out there. But for the most part, I think it's generally been quite good. People appreciate what we're doing and the response has been amazing. And in fact, while I was pregnant, we actually got a book deal, which was really incredible. I don't think either of us was expecting that to happen.
And how did it come about? Did it just land on you?
Someone from Penguin got in touch with us randomly one day and was like, have you guys thought about writing a book? And we were like, yeah, sure.
Yes, please.
So we did a book proposal, which took us, God knows how long, but they're very long and detailed, and sent it off. And then she ghosted us.
Oh,
yeah, so we didn't hear anything back. And we got all excited and then nothing happened. And then randomly, another person, it was an agent, not a publisher, got in touch and said, have you guys thought about writing a book? And we were like, funnily enough, yes, we have. And here's the work. So she ended up finding us another book deal with a different publisher. It was incredible. But it was all at a very strange time for me, because I think Otis was 6 weeks old when I went to my first publisher meeting.
Oh, Christ.
So I had him like in a sling. And he slept through the whole thing, which was incredible. But it was all very, I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah, where you're in such going? A weird cloud at that point as well.
Completely. Yeah.
Oh my God, because this conversation has taken an unusual turn, because usually I'm talking about people's pregnancy and birth and whatever, but your fertility journey is so related to what happened after essentially you had Otis and how your career changed. So it's wild. But with the pregnancy, having been through IVF and going through the whole process and then finally being pregnant. Firstly, tell me how IVF was, full stop. How was it?
Funnily enough, I think when me and my co-host Emma both say this, I think the worst bit of infertility for me at that point was trying naturally every month and having that hope and despair every month, hope, despair, hope, despair, hope, despair period. And that's really hard going. Once I got on the IVF train, I almost felt it was easier. I was, okay, someone else is helping me now.
It's being managed.
Yeah. And you have this very clear plan. I take these injections here. I take these pills. I do this, blah, blah, blah. And you're following a track. And because it worked first time, I never got to that point of like IVF is really grueling and awful. Yeah. It was just, I did what I was told and it worked. And so that's not everyone's experience. I was so lucky. Mm-hmm. So I didn't hate that bit. I have since had a lot more IVF, which I could talk about, which hasn't been as successful. Yes. But yeah, that first one was actually all right.
And yeah, exactly. And to have it work first time. And then, as you said, it must be a really strange relationship pivot then with your audience, because you sort of want to be completely over the moon. But as you said earlier, it's so difficult not to be insensitive. So were you elated or were you really nervous? Because I know that, again, people who've been through fertility issues then just get completely paranoid about having a miscarriage or losing it. Was that you, or did you feel quite confident?
I was incredibly nervous. I also had quite a lot of bleeding early on.
Yeah,
I think from around 6 weeks, I had a hematoma.
So you must have thought you were losing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I went to the hospital thinking it was all over.
Oh my God.
Turns out it wasn't. It was a miracle. I was, oh my God, how Jesus, is there so much blood and still a baby? But there was. So that was a bit of a rocky start. But luckily, it didn't happen again. And the rest of the pregnancy was actually pretty straightforward, but I didn't buy anything for the baby until well after 20 weeks.
Yeah. And I was the same. I had a miscarriage before my son, just really early, of 5 weeks or something.
Sorry.
Oh, it's okay. But basically, with all three of the pregnancies that I have had, I get terrible cramping. for weeks, like excruciating, like period pain in the first trimester. So I was always convinced I'm going to lose it. Like, I'm going to have a miscarriage. So it's strange, isn't it?
It really robs you of your innocence, doesn't it?
Yeah. Did you have to have a conversation with Emma then to be like, we need to decide then on how this is going to work in terms of how we do the podcast? And did Emma get pregnant?
Yeah, Emma actually got pregnant before me. Yeah, she was already pregnant for a while. And we did talk about her story a little bit in pregnancy. And I think the response we got was, please stop talking about pregnancy. So we stopped. We found our way by trial and error. And it was strange because we always had guests, but we were very much also kind of part of the story. But then we had to erase that and pull back. So we just kept having our guests and kept talking from a point of view of someone who's been through infertility and IVF, but also just not mentioning ourselves, basically.
Mm. So it gets then to your birth. How was that with Otis?
Oh, yes. So I was induced at 41 weeks.
Oh, joyful.
I could have gone on to 42, but I think I was too nervous. Yeah. So I got induced at 41, which was on Boxing Day. It was lovely.
At least it wasn't Christmas. That's good timing.
And it went very, I know that some people's inductions can go on and on. Mine went very quickly. Within a short space of time, I was experiencing like really heavy contractions and no space in between. You know, they talk about, and then you get a little break. I didn't really get a break. It was just full on.
Yeah.
And I was in King's in London and they allow you to go home after you've been induced. So I had the pessary and went home. So it all kicked off really quickly. And I don't think they believed me. My husband was like calling the hospital and being like, I think it's getting pretty serious. And they were like, oh, it's first baby. Stay at home for a bit longer. Eventually they were like, okay, she wants to push. Let's come. And I got there and I was 10 centimetres.
Oh, my Lord.
It all went quite quickly on through hospital. I was in the pool for a bit. That was nice. But then his heart rate dropped, so they got me out. And then my waters burst all over my poor midwife.
Amazing.
It was awful. They were green, which meant there was meconium. Okay. So then they were like, push the red button.
Yeah.
So then the room was full of people. And yeah, I had an episiotomy and they pulled him out with a ventouse. But he got there.
Oh my God. Operative words being like, he got there. So that's great. But how do you feel about the experience?
How did I feel about the experience? I think I was just so grateful it was over. But also, I think I was always aware it was quick. Yes, it was painful, but it was over fast. So I think I always had a sense of it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
It could have been worse. And of course, once the baby's there, that's it, right? You can't really dwell on anything else.
No. Interesting, though, because you do get such a mixture. Obviously, I've asked so many people now about pregnancies and their births and whatever. And it's amazing how every set of context, resources, etc. is just so different. Some people have what you think on paper sounds absolutely terrifying. And then they're like, oh, no, I'm fine. Just I got through it. And then other people were, because perhaps they'd had such a set idea of what they'd wanted from their birth in their minds, or they had a couple of really unfortunate interactions with people. And it just sets like such a tone for how they view their birth in the past. So I always like to ask people, because I just think it says a lot about character, right? I mean,
yeah,
how definitely. Able you are to move on from stuff. I don't know, not a criticism or a compliment, just an observation.
I'm definitely not one of those people who refers to their birth trauma. Do you know what I mean? I think
I don't really
see it as that way. I think it was fast. It was not ideal, but it wasn't the worst.
Yeah.
And I healed pretty quickly. I was quite lucky.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. Are you a woman on a career comeback journey or a business looking to empower your female employees during their maternity? Let me introduce you to the Spring Back Guide, a revolutionary digital coaching product that's changing the game for women and businesses alike. Our Spring Back Guide is designed to help women go back to work feeling happy and confident. It's like having a personal coach right on your phone guiding you every step of the way. Plus, now here's the real game changer. It costs just a fraction of the price of conventional coaching. No more time-consuming and expensive coaching sessions. With Spring Back Guide, we're putting the power in your hands, right where it belongs. We're not just changing the game, we're changing the way women and businesses consider maternity. If you're looking to make your career comeback with confidence, or if you're a business looking to empower your female workforce and want to find out more, visit us at springbackguide.com or follow us on Instagram @springbackguide and join the revolution today. okay, so you have Otis, you get this book deal, you go to this meeting 6 weeks postnatal. I wonder where the 6 week check fell into this equation. Did you have the 6 week check? Mine was so bad.
Yeah, I don't know. It was obviously in there somewhere. But
God, okay. You do the meeting with the publishers and then you're in the throes of having a very small child, but then also having to write a book when you've never written one before. But I assume that given that you were a writer, these skills were slightly up your sleeve.
Yeah, I'd like to think it was a bit easier because I'm a writer. And also it was half a book because I was writing it with Emma, my co-host. So I only had to write half a book. But it was a funny time because there was so much going on in my career and yet I couldn't be in it really. Once the kind of fog had lifted a bit, I was trying to do things quite often, and I'd go meet other people on their maternity leave, and then I'd be like, oh, I've got to go home, I need to try and bash out 800 words while he's napping. And that is stressful, especially when you've got a baby who only catnaps.
Yes, that is incredibly stressful. Yeah, so what was Otis like as a baby?
I mean, he was great, but he definitely, yeah, he didn't love napping. You know those babies that nap for like 2 or 3 hours in the middle of the day? Not him. No, yeah. It was 20 minutes at a time and that was it. And also obviously when he was 3 months old, the pandemic started. So that was
great.
Then you're dealing with a lot. But it actually, do you know what? It meant my husband was at home. So if I did need to jump on a meeting or do something, he could actually help a bit more, which was in hindsight quite good.
And actually good that kind of you avoided the like hell that was like giving birth during the pandemic, right?
Yes, indeed. I just snuck in under the door before it happened. So that was, I do feel very lucky.
So it must have been really helpful then to have your husband at home and yeah, just able to do that support. So in terms of the structure of the book, does Emma come from a writing background as well?
Yeah, we met each other at Management Today magazines. She's also a business journalist.
So this makes sense. And how did you find the process of writing that together then whilst also navigating pandemic? And I assume she still had an incredibly small child.
She did, yeah. She had maybe a 4 month old in that initial meeting.
Whoa.
Because we'd done a lot of work for the podcast already, so we'd interviewed a lot of people. So when we came down to plan the book, it just all flowed out of us. We were like, oh yeah, we'll interview that person, we'll talk to this person, we'll do this, blah blah blah. And the way the book works is essentially we've positioned it as a guide to infertility IVF.
Mm.
And the trials of trying for a baby. And it goes through trying naturally, introducing to IVF, and like talks about friendships, talks about work. It's just all of the different facets of experiencing infertility.
And I know that from a few people I've interviewed on this who have ended up writing books, people think, especially if you're not a writer, people think, oh, the publisher will help you. They'll give you like a structure. Uh-huh, and uh-huh. They don't. They just say, go off and write it. And then you think you'll send it back to an editor and they'll come back with loads of comments, and they don't really. So was that your experience as well?
Yeah, pretty much. We had to come up with all the structure ourselves. And yeah, I think the edits were like, have you thought about a paragraph on this?
Oh.
And you're like, oh yeah, sure, okay. So you just, and you're like, is it good? We wanted them to tell us whether it was any good or not, but I think obviously it was good enough.
And it's funny because again with you there isn't really a maternity, right? Because you were sort of already back within 6 weeks.
Yeah, and it also I think when you're freelance,
yeah,
you have this pressure to keep up with clients as well. So
yep.
I didn't want all of my clients to think I'd disappeared. So I used my keeping in touch days quite quickly and then just went back to work trying to find new commissions and stuff. So I ended up putting Otis into nursery 2 days a week from 9 months, which in many ways I was ready for it because I had all of this work to do and I was like, I didn't really want to have that stress of I should be doing that work whilst I'm looking after my child. So by putting him in 2 days a week, I took that pressure off myself because the time I had with him was with him. And it's one of those funny things, like one of my husband's colleagues was like, that's a bit early, isn't it?
Oh, thanks for your opinion.
Oh God, when someone says that to you, you just think, oh God, what am I doing? Is this a huge mistake? Is this, what am I doing? I've just tried for so long to have this baby and now I'm just giving him to someone else. And it was really hard. But I do think like when you're, certain people obviously have different reactions to this, but once you've been parenting full time for 9 months, that moment where you sit at your desk and you can breathe for a minute, it's actually just amazing.
Oh, it's magical.
Yeah. So I did really appreciate it at the same time as feeling terribly, horribly guilty about it.
of course, it's like a huge premise of this podcast, which is that work is so integral to our identity. It's you choose your GCSEs, you choose your A-levels, you choose your degree on, hopefully, on the basis of things that you're interested in and that you're good at. And then you take a job, which you're doing for at minimum, least 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And it really matters when you then have a baby and it drops a big kind of bomb into your working life. And you're thinking, hang on, why do I feel so lost? And it's because what you were doing the whole time before has literally come to a very abrupt end whilst you're experiencing this massive responsibility of suddenly taking on like a human life where if you get it wrong, it might die. Do you know what I mean?
God, totally. It was like, if I do a typo, it's the end. The world's not going to end.
But actually, I think that's one of the beauties of becoming a mum, which is that you just don't care about the politics anymore, and you don't sweat the small stuff as much because you think, I don't have to sit in A&E for 4 hours to figure out what's wrong with the PowerPoint deck. Like, I don't have to spend hours on Google, like convincing myself and everyone that like my child is incredibly ill.
Yeah.
This just doesn't really matter. I don't know.
It's so true.
It's quite freeing, I think.
Yeah, completely. And as I was saying earlier, like when I was working at the agency, I did have panic attacks in the bathroom. And it was all to do with work. And then all of a sudden you've got a kid and you're like, none of that matters, does it? Because my child is safe, he's healthy, and that's all I need. Yeah, it is good perspective. It's a really beautiful time because I think it's just this realization of, wow, okay, now my life is different. And I can still get excited about work and the new projects I've got going on. And my life was like that, getting a book deal was the most exciting thing that's ever happened to me.
Oh my God, so exciting.
It was incredible. Then you have this thing that you're like also doing. It is quite nice.
Yeah, exactly. I think sometimes there are some sort of common assumptions around having babies. And were there any that you felt you'd rebuffed by doing things in the order that you did?
I don't think so. I think a lot of people do go freelance after they've had a baby, and I can kind of understand why.
Mm.
But I didn't feel like I was doing anything differently per se. I think what I will always be different about is, I think when you're in an office environment, and especially when you're working in marketing, there's lots of women all of a certain age and lots of people going off to have babies. And I think, yeah, it's when people are having baby showers at work and bringing in their new babies in to show everyone, I think I'll always have a bit of a trigger around that kind of stuff, which is a bit sad. And it's things that I probably would never want to do. I'm always thinking, who in this room is going through infertility? Who am I going to upset?
So it's about other people. Yeah.
It's just an awareness now that I have that some people might be going through this, which I think is a good and a bad thing, I suppose.
Yeah. And I know how you feel, because I think if you've been through anything sort of, I guess the word is negative, like anything negative around like birth or around miscarriage or even just your child's health, I think, I don't know, I found my kind of dark side was when people were having baby showers or talking about their pregnancy. I was a bit like, if it works out, or if, and they're saying, oh, and then with the baby, when the baby's 3 months old, we'll go here. And I was like, well, if you can, you just, and I think, and that still crops up for me sometimes with people where I'm just like, you just never count your chickens. And because I had, and then I ended up with a poorly baby. So I don't know, it's difficult because the logical side of yourself goes, that is so unfair on that person. And why remove the joy from that person? Why rob them of that innocence just because you were robbed of yours? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's tricky.
Absolutely. And it's a really weird emotional state to be where you're happy for someone else, but also you've got this dark thing inside you, which is being triggered. It is weird. I think when you're the person that's going through it, you have to give yourself the permission to pull away from people, because otherwise it's too painful.
Yeah.
And then I suppose once everyone finds out what was going on, then you completely understand.
Yeah. Yeah. So you said that you had one round of IVF for Otis, but tell me about, when did you start thinking to yourself, okay, I've kind of done the baby thing, the podcast is doing incredibly well, I've written this book, life is obviously all on the up, and then you're thinking, I want another baby. And actually, this is not that long ago, given that you're 20 something weeks, right?
Not that long ago. It certainly wasn't immediate, let's put it that way.
Yeah, so what happened?
Well, I think once we'd had such a good experience trying to conceive Otis. Such a wonderful experience having IVF. I just assumed I wouldn't have any more children. I was kind of like, this is a miracle. I can't, you know, we're so lucky. Why would we try and perform this miracle
twice? So you thought you wouldn't have any more? Interesting.
Yeah, I gave all of the baby stuff away.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I was like, yeah, this is it. It's done. We've got our family. How amazing. Aren't we lucky? That's it. And then through the IVF process with Otis, we had 3 embryos left over, which were in the freezer, which you luckily you pay for it every month. A little direct debit comes out of your account every month. Yeah. And occasionally they send you an email saying, would you like us to continue?
Would you like your babies?
Yeah. Would you like to continue keeping your embryos on ice?
It's so surreal.
Oh my God, don't. And you're like, oh God, don't ask me that.
Yeah, that is very weird. Can I just say, very weird.
It's a very strange email to get, I have to tell you.
Yeah.
And so I guess it was on my mind, obviously, as it is on most people's, whether to have another. I was so into the idea of just having one that I actually pitched a book idea to my editor saying all about only children.
Oh, like one and done type thing.
Yeah, one and done. She loved it. I've written a book proposal for it. And then just in the middle of all of this, I was like, do you know what? Can we leave those 3 embryos in the freezer? I just don't know if I can. So we thought, oh, we'll just try one. And so this was in March last year. So we tried
March 23. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, one didn't work. I was like, oh, quite shocked. I thought this just worked for me. Mm. What's going on? And then did another one in June. That didn't work. I was like, oh God, this, what is going on?
Mm.
And I really actually didn't want to do the third, but I was just over IVF by that point. I was like, do you know what? It's fine. I don't need another one. But you can't leave one embryo in the freezer, can you?
No.
It's impossible. So we tried again in August, and the last embryo is the one that worked. So,
oh my goodness.
Yes, indeed. So here we are.
And do you know what it is? I mean, it's an embryo. Do you know if it's a colour or a boy?
It's another boy.
How exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. Yeah, yeah. I'm into it now. I've lost all of my one and done attitude, and I'm embracing it. It's very exciting. And again, I feel very lucky because I know some people it doesn't work ever. We've been blessed.
Yeah, but incredibly blessed. But I mean, that's so funny that you were writing a book proposal and then you were like,
not on my high horse. I was like, you know, people do judge if you say you're not going to have any more. Like, oh, are you sure? What about, you know,
well, blah, blah. And sibling.
I was quite incensed by it. And I think there was a fire in my belly. I wanted to write about it, but I've decided I can't really do that now.
I've realised that however many children you have, though, people will always ask if you have more. Like,
God, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah, my brother has 3 and he's constantly being asked, but he's having a 4th. He's like, are you insane? Like, we live in London, like, we cannot afford this. No way.
Yeah, absolutely no way. And I'm lucky I've got to the end of my embryo. So the question is now removed. This is it, which is, it's a relief in many ways.
So obviously pregnant with your second, what do you see in the future for Big Fat Negative? Do you think you're still going to be doing this in 10 years?
Gosh, that is a good question. I don't know is the answer because my co-host is also, she had her second last year. Yeah, so we are on a bit of a break at the moment. We haven't really done any new episodes for quite a while.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, yeah.
Yeah, apart from we did like a sneaky bonus episode series about my embryo transfer. But beyond that, we haven't had guests on or anything. But I think we both want to, because I don't think we want to put a stop on it. We don't need to announce anything. I think we'll just see how it goes. And if people still want to listen to us, I mean, there is that thing of like, you've now got 2 kids each. Can you host a podcast about infertility? So I think we may well try and explore different avenues. Mm. But for the time being, I think we'll keep going.
And who is the best guest you ever had?
Who's the best guest? We had Emma Barnett, who is one of my heroes.
Oh,
I love her. I think she's amazing. And so we've been following her career for years. So she was obviously great. But who else? There's also the kind of mad stories that are also the ones that stick out in mind. Mm-hmm. Like we interviewed this guy who basically the whole premise of his story was that he couldn't produce his sample his wife was in the theatre having her eggs collected. And it was just the way he told this story was just, it was so funny, but also, I think it must have scared everyone as well. Like everyone listening to you be like, oh my God, if that happens to me. So that one does stick out in my mind as well. But we've had so many, man. We've been very lucky. We've had some great people to chat to us about it.
Oh, so good. So good. I think obviously I'm biased, but I think doing a podcast is amazing because it just, if you like people's stories, if you're just a people, if you're interested in people, then you're just absolutely winning. And I thought that everybody was like this, but I don't think they are.
Yeah, no, I don't think they are either. But it is, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it so much. I wish I could just do it full time, but unfortunately.
So no kind of strategic, really long-term visions for it as yet. You're just seeing how it goes.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my co-host is still on mat leave. I don't think either of us wants to get too serious about stuff and the future yet. But we will, I'd say, watch this space. We'll see. There have been talks of another book, but form that would take, we don't really know yet. So that could be exciting.
Yeah. And obviously you're doing speaking engagements and stuff. So you're obviously quite passionate about fertility and work and making that work. So any grand plans for that?
Not really. I guess it's nice to know that people think of us when when they want someone to come and talk about fertility.
Yeah.
So I guess we're just, honestly, I'm sorry to disappoint, no grand plans at the moment.
No, not at all. And there are some, as you said, there are some really interesting players in this space who are really looking into it. My friend's actually just sold it, but it was an app all around the kind of social well-being of fertility called Aura, which is really cool. And then there's Fertility Matters at Work. There's all sorts of really interesting people coming out into the ether. And I'm so pleased because it feels like the landscape has changed so much, even from 5 years ago.
Oh gosh, totally. It felt taboo when we were talking about it.
Yeah.
And it definitely doesn't anymore, much.
Yeah. Look, it's been such a pleasure having you on and hearing all about your maternity, or rather not maternity, but that's fine. That's all part of it. But I wish you all the very best with your second pregnancy. It's incredibly exciting. I really hope
Thank you so much.
And in the meantime, please take care of yourself. And I will definitely be tuning into lots of Big Fat Negative podcast episodes. I'm so intrigued now.
Thank you very much. And I'll be tuning into Maternity as well, not just my own episode.
Amazing. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.
You made it. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Maternity. We hope you found the discussion inspiring and informative. Maternity is about celebrating and supporting women on their back to work journeys. And speaking of support, don't forget about the Spring Back Guide. It's the innovative and cost-effective solution for women and businesses alike. Empower yourself or your female workforce with confidence and success on the road to maternity. To learn more about the Spring Back Guide and how it's changing the way we approach women's return to work, visit springbackguide.com. See you next week.